It's a Tuesday edition of the Maya AgLife Daily News Report. Welcome and thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Taylor Charlstrom will be in with a feature report, and I'll have a look at regional and national agricultural news, beginning with regional ag news, right after this word from our sponsor.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
The California Department of Food and Agriculture and the California State Board of Food and Agriculture are announcing a bold plan for the future. It's called Ag Vision for the Next Decade. Ag Vision centers on growing opportunity for farmers and ranchers, farm workers, individuals and communities, and demonstrating leadership on climate action. The plan, which will guide areas of focus for CDFA and serve as a catalyst for action with farmers and ranchers and other California agencies and partners, is being held as not just a plan for agriculture, but a plan to benefit every Californian. The plan was developed using a robust and inclusive process that focuses on five priority areas. Those points include fostering climate-smart, resilient, and regenerative food systems, supporting efforts that improve agriculture's effect on the environment, encouraging wise stewardship of water and natural resources, eliminating waste, and our regenerative practices that enhance ecosystems and improve the land. The second is building healthy local communities, which is investing in local and socially disadvantaged communities with an emphasis on diverse populations. The next is driving generation talent and tools, which supports workforce development programs aimed at attracting, supporting, and providing high-quality jobs and leadership opportunities for a diverse agricultural workforce, while also driving research and real-time feedback from farmers and ranchers to stimulate and accelerate innovation to solve problems and build opportunities. The fourth is enhancing understanding of agriculture, serving as a voice for California farmers and ranchers within the administration and other agencies, and support the engagement of urban and rural audiences. And the last point is collaborating on smarter regulations, which is working with other state agencies, stakeholders, and the administration to explore and support smarter regulations that rethink ways to both meet public obligations and support farmers with simplified, less expensive regulatory compliance, reporting, and implementation. While the University of California Merced's experimental smart farm is focused on technology and automation, it's also about machine-human collaboration. That was among the messages UC Merced's representatives shared in a panel discussion at the What's the Future of Agriculture in California Symposium held recently at California State University, Fresno. UC Merced's panel introduced the university's smart farm, which will serve as a hub for data gathering as well as projects researchers can try out before scaling to larger properties. And though much at the farm will be working towards automating some tasks, the goal is also to create better, more highly skilled jobs for the farm labor force. They like to think about smart in terms of human resources, elevating the worker and making the work experience more enjoyable, less prone to injury and safer, according to Professor Tom Harmon, who co-leads the farm. He says they're envisioning lots of careers for mechanical engineers, computer scientists, or other technicians who wrangle these robots. In the keynote address, California Secretary of Food and Agriculture Karen Ross said that California agriculture is the envy of the world, and despite challenges, the pandemic, and other disruptors, farmers and ranchers are innovators and can be part of the climate solution. But as agriculture moves forward, she said there's a vital need for increased flexibility and adaptability on the part of the state. More than 700 people registered to attend the free one-day in-person and virtual summit. Colder areas of the Arizona-California desert region recently experienced light lettuce ice after strong cold winds swept through the area. This marks the latest ice event of any winter growing season in memory. Minimal delays are reported and no significant challenges are anticipated from this ice event. Marcon inspectors will continue to monitor the desert region for quality. There's an oversupply of tomatoes right now. It's an oversupply that's almost a glut, according to Bob Spencer of West Coast Tomato LLC, noting that it is affecting all varieties of tomatoes. There are a few reasons why tomato volume is where it's at right now. He says there have been great yields from Mexico, and there is increased acreage as well. With the increased plantings and the good yields, they keep sending them across the border below their cost of production. Meanwhile, warm temperatures in Florida have led to different tomato plantings merging, contributing to that general overproduction. On top of that, there's also some greenhouse production underway, which will continue to grow in the coming weeks. What about demand? Whenever you go into this type of overproduction, demand just slows down because there are more tomatoes than there are users right now, according to Spencer, noting, though, that as the warm weather comes on, demand could pick up to relieve that oversupply. All this has led to pricing that is low and below the cost of production. He says it's been developing over the past 3 weeks. The market has slowly dropped to a very low point. While it's challenging, Spencer hopes shipments from Mexico will recede in the next few weeks. That will mean less tomatoes than market, and with warmer weather, the yields may come back a little and not be quite as high, and that will allow the price to rise. Camelina is a crop that can be made into renewable diesel and has a low carbon intensity score. It's taken time, but the drive for renewable diesel expansion and Camelina's CI score is drawing more attention. Refiners are looking for feedstocks that will help meet some of the growth expectations for renewable diesel. In 2022, renewable diesel production was estimated at about 1.75 billion gallons. If all departments come online, the Department of Energy estimates that renewable diesel production could top 5.1 billion gallons by the end of 2024. In 2015, the California Air Resources Board initially issued its first-of-the-kind low-carbon pathway for Camelina to sustainable oils. When first announced, Sustainable Oils, a subsidiary of Global Clean Energy Holdings, said California regulators gave Camelina-based biodiesel a carbon intensity score that was one-fifth of soy's carbon intensity, making it easier for refiners to meet emission reduction targets. Sustainable Oils seed varieties remain the only Camelina approved for California's low carbon fuel standard. This past September, GCE and some partners were awarded up to $30 million under USDA's Partnership for Climate Smart Commodities to further develop Camelina as an ultra low carbon fuel feedstock. The goal for Global Clean Energy is to increase farmer adoption of Camelina on idle acreage for renewable diesel production and no land use change while increasing carbon capture in the soil. USDA's Climate Smart funding will boost incentives for producers to grow Camelina for sustainable oils. GCE is working to finish turning an idle oil refinery in Bakersfield, California into a renewable diesel plant. The project is about a year behind schedule. It was trying to hit a March 31st deadline. The delays on a renewable diesel conversion could jeopardize a $125 million investment from Mobil Exxon, who has filed a threat to pull out of the project if the facility wasn't operational this spring.
Climate change is impacting all facets of agriculture, including where it all begins, with breeding. Chris Owens is the lead plant breeder for International Fruit Genetics, which is the largest table grape breeder in the world. He talks to us about some of the challenges they face breeding grape and cherry varieties that are able to overcome the multitude of issues related to climate change.
It has a pretty direct impact on us because the crops that we work with are they're woody plants, and they take a fairly long time to breed compared to, say, like an agronomic crop like corn or soybeans. And so the decisions we make today on the direction of the breeding program, we really need to be thinking many, many years into the future, you know, at least 10, but more like 20 years into the future. And, you know, all the climate models are showing that we're going to be dealing with a warming planet for the next few decades. And so we have to think about that and try to do what we can now to design varieties that can thrive in that environment, you know, 15, 20 years from now. So it's something that's, you know, front of mind just because of the long-term horizon for the projects that we have.
While IFG is well known for their grapes, they also produce high-quality cherries. IFG is currently developing cherries that have a lower chilling requirement compared to traditional varieties. The low-chill cherries are being bred in part to expand cherry production into non-traditional areas, but also to combat the atypical warming being caused by climate change.
Yeah, our cherry program is unique in that we're really trying to push the envelope in developing cherries that have a very low chilling requirement. Most of your traditional cherry producing areas are in fairly temperate regions of the world where they have a lot of cold weather in the winter. So they're typically a temperate plant where the buds will stay dormant until they have a certain number of hours of cold temperature. There's usually like an ideal window where it's cold, but not below freezing. And it's a sort of a protection mechanism for the plant so they don't push buds too early in the springtime when there's still a danger of a frost. But we are based in the southern portion of the Central Valley of California, where the winters are pretty mild. And there are cherries grown traditionally around here, this part of the valley, but it's a pretty small, and it's probably more on the fringe of where you can grow cherries. And so we're trying to develop new varieties that have very low chilling requirement. Long term, ideally, we try to get to the point where they don't have any at all. So that's sort of like the main objective of our program is to combine low chill with really high fruit quality. Then there's a whole list of other characteristics that are important as well, but that's kind of the main areas. And so global warming sort of ties into that in a few ways, in that not only are temperatures rising in the summertime, they're also rising in the wintertime in a lot of areas. So in some places where there used to be sufficient chilling to grow a cherry tree, there might not be anymore, or there might not be in certain years. And so developing low chill varieties actually is a good solution for, you know, a global warming, because it allows you more flexibility on where you can plant your cherries. One of our initial reasons for starting the program was honestly to move into more novel areas where cherries aren't traditionally grown, but it also has the side benefit of, you know, they would also be appropriate in, you know, a kind of a global warming type of environment. And then it's also where we have our program, it's also very hot in the summertime. And so it's actually the cherries, most cherry varieties don't enjoy the extreme heat that we have here. And so at the same time, we get to also be selecting for heat tolerance, which will also be important if people are trying to grow cherries in the future. And even in more traditional places like the eastern part of Washington is a big cherry producing area. They've had a lot of issues with excessive heat the last few seasons as well. So it's not just us here in a more non-traditional area. It's also an issue in our primary cherry producing regions.
On the grape front, IFG is seeking to breed grapes that are able to withstand not only warmer climates, but also extreme weather events such as high temperature spikes and abnormally heavy rainfall. Additionally, Owen said one of IFG's broader goals is to reduce the amount of inputs needed in their grape breeding program.
Yeah, so for our grape program, we are also trying to develop varieties that can withstand warmer environments. And what we're seeing is it's not just rising temperatures, but also there's more extreme events. So that could be a temperature spike, which, you know, it also can be like a heat stress type of event. But we're also seeing more rainfall in unexpected times. So a lot of the grape producing areas, traditional areas, they're generally drier areas where you don't get a whole lot of rain in the summertime. Rainfall on the fruit, depending on the timing and the amount, can lead to cracking of the fruit in the field. And so they're generally grown places where you don't have a lot of summer rainfall. But that's changing. So we're seeing unusual rain patterns, not all the time and not everywhere, but in certain regions, certain places, people are getting more rain than they normally would. So, kind of a combination of unexpected rainfall, more humid conditions, makes us try to develop both varieties that can withstand some rain, so they're crack tolerant. But also makes disease resistance more important. So more rain, more humidity leads to more fungal pathogens. And so, we have an objective to also develop resistance to some of the more important fungal diseases of grapes. And, sort of along with that, it's just it's not necessarily all entirely directly related to global warming, but just sort of like another Earth Day initiative. It's another, you know, related objective is just to try to reduce inputs into our grape breeding program. So reduce pesticide applications. In grapevines, in table grapes in particular, there's a lot of growth regulators that get applied. So trying to reduce the number of growth regulators that need to be used. You know, trying to reduce the amount of fuel people need by driving tractors through all the time. I mean, these are all sort of long-term goals to try to reduce the carbon footprint and the chemical footprint really of what people are doing. But that's definitely something that we think about in what we're trying to do.
This is Kylie Harlan reporting for My Ag Life.
AgroPlante is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. AgroPlante formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. AgroPlante developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. AgroPlante, imagination, innovation, science in action.
The Fresh Produce Association of the Americas recently hosted a spring policy summit, bringing together industry leaders, policymakers, and experts to discuss critical issues facing a fresh produce industry. The summit featured a diverse range of speakers and panel discussions covering topics such as food safety, trade agreements, the economic benefits of trade, and reducing transit times for fresh produce shipments. Lance Juggemeyer, president of FPAA, provided the welcoming remarks for the 2023 spring policy summit. The keynote address was delivered by Ambassador Doug McCallop, Chief Agricultural Trade Negotiator for the U.S. Trade Representative, who shared his insights on U.S.-Mexico trade and the economic importance of the relationship. One of the highlights of the summit was a panel discussion on how the produce industry and USDA can work together to enhance programs like U.S. marketing orders and grade standards. The panel featured a team of experts from USDA. And the summit included the topic of food safety. In addition, participants had the opportunity to learn from U.S. Customs and Border Protection on how the agency is using technology to improve the efficiency and security of moving commercial goods, including fresh produce at land ports of entry. A new report by the American Gas Association on natural gas usage by U.S. agriculture shows how important this product is to the industry. This is especially true for several Midwestern states with economies dependent upon agriculture and the various subsectors. The report analyzed the natural gas consumption and economic impacts of U.S. crops, livestock, food processors, and agrochemical sectors of the U.S. economy. The findings in the analysis are based on data from the U.S. Energy Information Administration and federal economic data embedded in the in-plan economic model. The report found that U.S. agriculture is a major part of the economy as it provides 5 million direct jobs. In addition, agriculture contributes $437 billion to the U.S. gross domestic product. Accounting for indirect suppliers and induced expenditures, the U.S. agriculture sector supports 17.2 million jobs and approximately $1.75 trillion in U.S. GDP. Brian Jennings, Chief Executive Officer of the American Coalition for Ethanol, says when it comes to climate smart agriculture, ethanol has a stake in the emerging field.
There's a lot of emphasis both internationally and domestically on how do we reduce carbon pollution? How do we tackle greenhouse gas emissions? And using more ethanol, displacing petroleum-based gasoline, is one of the best ways to quickly do that at a low-cost way.
He wants to be sure that ethanol is recognized for its positive carbon score, not only in a 2023 farm bill, but in future energy policy discussions.
When the carbon footprint is determined by government agencies and comparing ethanol to oil or gasoline, for example, that those farm level practices that have a dramatically positive effect on reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Think about the nitrous oxide emissions that are reduced when you more efficiently use nitrogen fertilizer. When you go to reduced tillage or no-till, compared to a conventional tillage system. You're storing carbon in your soil. You're not only improving the health and quality of that soil, you're storing carbon in that soil. So that helps bring down the carbon intensity. We want to make sure the Farm Bill rewards farmers for these kinds of activities. And we want to make sure the Farm Bill counts these activities towards ethanol's carbon score.
Brian Jennings, Chief Executive Officer for the American Coalition for Ethanol. I'm Lori Boyer. For more information on the ethanol industry, go to agriculture.com.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.